Hey everybody, welcome back to our coverage of Connected America 2025. You know, the cool thing about our industry is that we always continue to evolve, but there is a certain part of our infrastructure that's reached a level of maturity. So no longer are we talking about digging trenches and running pipe for every single buyer that we have. We're allowed to now have conversations about optimization, best practices, use cases, proactive maintenance, and how we can better serve the clients that are already part of that infrastructure. And to have that conversation today, my next guest is Russell Eagle from BRE Networks. Russell, thanks so much for coming on.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
You know, Russell, I think that it's easy for us to sort of define our industry by, I don't know that two buyers is the right word, but you've sort of got the, what I would call the condensed populations and then maybe more the rural populations, right? I would say the second half or the almost unreached group is sort of that rural piece. We'll start our conversation there. We'll kind of get into the more centralized setups in a second, but I want to start on the rural side of things. What opportunities do we have as an infrastructure community, particularly a fiber community,
right,
to reach some of these folks, right? Because we've got applications like telemedicine, remote work, remote education. The use cases are there. How do we reach those people?
Such a good question. And I think that you end with the most important point, which is what is the value of providing a high-speed connection, a reliable high-speed connection to every home in America? And the answer is unequivocal. The Fiber Broadband Association, a lot of others have done studies, and the net economic benefits speak for themselves. The problem is translating that social benefit, that long-term benefit, into the people who've got to do the work, who've got to provide the service, who have to deploy the networks. And that's what we spend a lot of time grappling with at BRE, is helping our customers think about the best way to deploy a fiber network, but also where to go do it. To your first point, what we're finding is the easy half of the United States has been covered. The easy half, from a financial point of view, from a technological, from a logistics point of view, have access to reliable high-speed connections. Now, there is still a really robust and viable market for high-speed connectivity. How you do that is going to require more creativity, new approaches to old problems, and frankly, a lot more planning up front to do this correctly. And we're having a blast helping our customers get that done.
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting to see, and you sort of hear this conversation popping up throughout the show this year, is that, you know, we thought that things like 5G connected internet and Starlink would really help fill that gap. And it's a nice to have, right? But the reality is that our, especially in our hospitals and our places of business, obviously in our homes, from a rural application, the demand is high.
Yeah.
And 5G satellite can't handle the saturation. They can't handle the load. Heaven forbid we start looking at building data centers out there.
Yeah.
The conversation sort of is a non-starter. But, you know, how do you have that conversation with a municipality, a co-op, who says, ah, we're good. We've got coax and we've got Starlink.
Right.
How do you make them make that hop?
So I'm a big fan. I actually spent much of my career in the wireless industry. So I have tremendous affection and respect for a variety of mobile, satellite, or fixed wireless solution. I think that we are living in a golden age of different ways to make connections happen. I also have been around long enough in this industry to know that in the long run, a terrestrial internet connection always ends up being the solution.
Yes.
Now that long run can be 6 months, it could be 5 years, it could be whatever it is. So what I view right now as a great opportunity is for us as an industry to figure out how do we get connections in the short term, but also how do we make sure that there's a migration path, a long-term path to getting what we know is the best way of making an internet connection. And that's over strands of glass in the long run. So the one you asked about municipalities, about ISPs, how we think about that. And generally what we strongly believe is that a well-planned network where the service provider or the engineering company or whomever has invested a lot of time up front to make sure they understand the roads, understand the poles, understand the terrain, you're able to make these connections, you're able to make these networks with really, really good knowledge up front about the cost-benefit analysis. And that cost-benefit analysis, either through government funding, through better planning, through new technologies, is opening up opportunities every single day.
Even privatized networks, right? You find folks that are wanting to pay for portions of that in schools and in regionalities and cities and townships and things 100%. Like that. You know, I want to ask though, because it's we can sort of talk out of our mouths all day, and that's great. But the challenge has been in rural expansion. It's the dollars. It's the manpower.
Yep.
It's one of the things that you guys like to attack from a planning standpoint, right? You want to 100%. Talk about that cost-benefit analysis and also sort of the staffing and planning and maintenance side of things. Right. How do we get there? How do we get to a point where it becomes cost-positive for them instead of being a local ISP saying, I've got to dump millions of dollars into infrastructure for five endpoints?
Yeah. So we spend a lot of time thinking about how organizations can reuse existing assets so that they can actually provide defray the cost of a connection, amortize the fixed expense of providing this, and let's face it, pretty expensive upfront build over as many assets as possible. And one thing that we found is that when we historically service providers, the planning groups have been really good at identifying, here's a profitable pocket, there's a profitable pocket, and sort of thinking about it that way. When we help them go through this, what we find is once you've found two pockets that are clearly have a positive business case, if you revisit points in between along the way connections, suddenly you don't need to make as much money. Suddenly you don't need to have as high a take rate for those places along the way to make really good economic sense. So we spend a lot of time with our customers trying to help them understand that the economics aren't binary for certain areas. And if it's a really, really rural area and there is no along the way, if they're at the end of the cul-de-sac, so to speak, then maybe that's a point at which in the short term, fiber alternate solutions make a sense. But honestly, even if you're thinking how they get electricity and who doesn't have electricity, that connection is there. The capability to drag some sort of piece of glass that way isn't, we just have to get the incentives lined up. Well, it's not as hard as we think.
I want to put a pin in that electrical conversation because we're going to come back to it here in just a second. But it's interesting, right? Because the rural communities are having conversations about first-time infrastructure, right?
Right.
Look, they could tie into the fiber line. I mean, sorry, they could tie into the coax lines. There's a lot of things that they could do there.
Right.
But the beautiful thing about fiber and it sort of being in a, especially in areas like Dallas,
right,
reached a point of relative maturity, right?
Right.
There aren't a lot of people. There are obviously some, I'm going to get some statistician yelling at me in the comments here.
Right.
But for the most part, folks who want fiber and who need access to fiber in the DFW area and a lot of major areas worldwide.
Right.
In the U.S., I see, I've got to correct myself every time because I'm going to get somebody who yells at me. Most of the people who want fiber can have access to it, right? So now we're talking about creating value beyond just the infrastructure, right? We're talking about, okay, how do we use these digital networks to expand? How can we use them to drive value in AI and cloud computing? And how do we drive value in, dark fiber and all sorts of different things? Talk about that perspective, right? Because when we're talking about these massive kind of areas, we're not having the same conversations, obviously, in the world of rural. What are some of the challenges that maybe these larger deployments have had and maybe some opportunities as they continue to grow?
So, you know, and this is one of the harder bits of truth for all the people in the industry working on optimization and math and all the things that even we do on a daily basis. A lot of the difficulty in getting networks deployed isn't necessarily just about the gear and the plan. It's about the permission and getting the permits lined up and getting the ability to do that. And that is a very localized issue. You can have a very different permitting regime in some states compared to other states. And
you're allowed to say it. Texas is good. We love Texas. Oh, we're a Texas company. We love
I don't think there would be an unconnected home in the United States if we were all, put 10-gallon hats on and did it that way. But here we are. We live in a country with a lot of regional say-so, a lot of municipal level say-so, and that's just the reality of it. So, we try and, again, help people, think about their network in a way where maybe it's optimized. Maybe you're putting in more gear, but you're doing fewer permits.
Yeah.
And that, we have a lot of algorithms that point in that direction. So again, it's, you know, we're thinking about the dense urban areas, they're covered, exurbs, suburbs, rural, there's a lot of uncovered there, and people who really are willing to pay for it. They don't want to commute. They don't want to have second tier access. They want to do it correctly. And the opportunities are there. We just got to think about it more creatively as an industry.
Well, I mean, out of curiosity too, right? You guys get to live in the world of sort of the new build and the optimization standpoint. Right. What sorts of, and this is probably outside of maybe the major ISPs, you know, let's think small, medium here. What sorts of revenue opportunities exist for maybe those small and medium size ISPs from not only just, you know, sticking a pipe in somebody's house, but what are some of the ways that they can monetize that network as well?
So we often encourage our customers to work with us on seeing over the horizon, right? And, you know, you're building a network, we're designing this network for you, and we'll build it to certain throughput rates. We'll build it to support, you know, certain thing. But is that enough? You know, are you thinking about when you build your network, having drops ready at the local high school?
Right.
Are you thinking about having drops built in at the town square? Because there are a lot of vendors out there selling the equipment you deploy once the network's built, who have amazing solutions that allow a small ISP to set up a pop-up, you know, mesh coverage on the town square if there happens to be a festival, or free Wi-Fi for their people when they go to the high school football game. These are amazing opportunities to do things, frankly, that the tier one vendors are just too big to think about on that local level. So we really encourage people to not just think about drops at the home, the apartment, and the business, but in places that, listen, if you're in the middle of the build, that incremental drop, that incremental sort of installation is very cheap compared to the flexibility it gives you to do some really creative and amazing community-oriented things once the network is up and running.
No, Russell, you sort of mentioned that localization effort, right? And that's one of the benefits that the SMBs in the industry have access to.
Yeah.
And I want to circle back to something that we talked about a second ago because it's relevant, you know, where the ISP works with the utility and they work with maybe the electric provider, the co-op, and some of the smaller places where, look, communication and connectivity has reached a point where it's a utility, right?
Yeah.
That conversation's dead and gone. We're there, right? How can ISPs, telco providers, you know, folks at the end of the line better partner maybe with some of those utilities and other service providers locally to make sure whether it's they're using the same, you know, pipes or conduit or trenches, how can folks maximize those partnerships?
I would say some of the smartest service providers out there who know their territory, who know their local area, are having conversations at the permitting phase with the home builders or the development owners associations. Because what we have found is if you enable those entities who aren't service providers themselves, but to understand why they should be putting an extra duct in or some extra pipes in when they're doing the land prep, right, at that very early greenfield stage, it reduces the cost of deployment for the service provider down the road. B, it empowers the developer to have a little bit more say-so about the kind and quality of service that they're going to provide.
And not shredding water lines.
And B, your harmony, we believe firmly that the power grid of the future is going to look more and more like a datacom grid. Because you're going to have a variety of sources of generation. It's not just coming from the transfer. That will always be the main point, but there'll be a variety of other things and calculating those loads and putting that together. The smart developers and the smart ISPs are able to have that discussion before the backhoes even start, you know, leveling earth. Because once the units are built, the first thing people are going to ask before they move in is, do I have Wi-Fi?
Right.
Do I have a high-speed connection? How is this going to work? And the answer has to be, it's already there.
Yeah.
So opportunities like that, for me, drive a huge kind of discussion that hasn't typically taken place, because most of the country has been, you know, done for already built real estate. But these infill deployments, these greenfield deployments, are going to be what the country needs. We don't have enough homes. And as you said, communications infrastructure has got to be there from day one.
Well, and I love that you kind of spotlight some of the new build side of things as well, right? Because if I'm a home builder, probably not at a show like this, right?
Right.
Probably not. But, okay, I'm looking for differentiation for my client. I'm looking for value. We, you know, God bless Texas. Like I said, we built as many homes as fast as we could during COVID, but it slowed down a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So we now have to be able to differentiate. We all want smart homes. We all want to gig up and down. We all want, you know, is it solar? Is it battery backups? We're having all these conversations. And oddly enough, connectivity has sort of been the end of the line there. And it shouldn't be,
right?
Because we've got people working from home. We've got people that are, you know, using it for telemedicine and streaming and entertainment,
yeah,
all these different things. So as a home builder, if you prioritize these conversations, you're going to have success because you're creating value for your client. Question, this isn't planned, but do you guys work with home builders at all? Is it something that you guys see a lot of value in? Or
we're emphasizing that discussion more and more.
I think that might be a good place to land the plane, but I'll tell you what, I'll give you the last word here in the conversation before we wrap.
Much.
You know, our industry continues to evolve. We see, yeah, more new faces every year, whether it's folks from skilled trades that are coming in to be technicians or laying pipe, or
right,
folks from outside industries,
right,
maybe the wireless coming into to the terrestrial side. What advice do you have people that are coming in for the first time?
People coming in for the first time, you got to know that anyone you talk to in this industry that knows what he or she is talking about has been doing it for 30 years. It's not like this is an industry that's learning how to do this as it goes along. So come in with your ears open, listen a lot, and understand that whatever you do in one place is going to have local nuances wherever you go. And there is simply no one size fits all. But if you can come up with a way of working with people at a local level that helps them get the job done a little bit faster, a little bit more efficiently, a little bit more safely, people will embrace you with open arms.
Well, Russell, I'll tell you, these are conversations that people in the industry need to continue to have. And I appreciate you coming on today.
It's a pleasure.
And I appreciate you sharing your knowledge on stage. I know that you had a panel discussion earlier, so
yeah,
I know that there were some great folks in the audience. Last final question, actually, for real this time. If folks want to reach out to you, how can they find you?
Oh, brnetworks.com is our website. We have a lot of ways of reaching out. And obviously, we're all over LinkedIn and all the other places. So please click away. Happy to talk.
Well, Russell, thank you. And thank you all for tuning in to our coverage at Connected America 2025. Be sure to stay tuned for more.
Thanks.